It's exciting that for the first time, we're in the same classroom back-to-back times. We're kind of nomads. The campus really doesn't know what to do with us, so we found something. We never, none of us had ever even been in this building, and it's the one place they let us use. So we'll take it.
There you go. Find a spot, make it your home.
Yeah, and then, you know, like I sent you some of the topics, and I think this is our, our third or fourth one. And then we just kind of let the conversation flow as well. I got questions, and then at 12:45, at the latest, and I do think we'll probably go that long because it'll be great content. But me and Ashley are training women's basketball at 1:00, so we'll be hustling out of here, getting some cones set up and getting ready to work with them.
No, that sounds great.
I was gonna ask you too, and Brock Calvillo is our sports science GA. And not sure where he is, to be quite honest, but he'll ask the intern questions. Maybe the only D3 with the sports science GA, because he's still got eligibility in baseball, so he couldn't be on the floor working with athletes per NCAA rules. So I said, well, I need a sports science guy, and he'll just sit in my office, and we won't allow him to be on the floor so he can maintain his baseball eligibility.
Got it.
And then, yeah, Blake Wilson, intern, volunteer intern, former football player. Ashley, intern, former softball player. Brock, still playing baseball. Chris LaPole's kind of our behind-the-scenes. He edits the video and does a great job with that. And Kaiser Decker, just because it's Tuesday, he's an intern as well. But I've got the kind of nuts and bolts strength conditioning questions. Brock has the intern kind of business questions. And if he doesn't show up, I'll fill in for him and do my best. You want me to call you Coach Van Dyke, Matt? Does it matter?
Matt is fine. Yeah.
All right. Well, then I'll get rolling. And when I say this is for Chris. Hey, Chris, this is when you would start after this. You can edit the first part out. All right, Matt Van Dyke from the Houston Texans. Appreciate you being here. We've been trying to, I was looking back at our Twitter or XDMs. I think it was 2023 when I was at an old school and I taught a strength condition elective, and I tried to get you on, and you've always been so receptive and reply quick, and I appreciate that. Then I tried to get it out to the clinic. And finally, who knew intern chit chat would be how we connected. But I do appreciate you taking the time out. And I was looking at your website today. I was blown away that the staff of the Houston Texans and how many people y'all have. When you invest that much money, I guess you're going to put a lot of people to work to make sure they're healthy and performing at a high level. Yancey McKnight, we had Eric Anthony on there. I didn't intend to have kind of his coaching tree, but I guess your paths must have crossed with Eric at some point, right?
Yeah, EA was my actually like first strength coach. So Yance was the head strength coach at Iowa State. I was a walk-on there. And then EA was like responsible for the like skills developmental group when I first arrived on campus. So EA was like my first like vantage point of a strength coach. So awesome. Yeah, he was at Texas in that sports science role before I got there. Yeah, EA is awesome, well-respected guy.
Yeah, he was our pilot. We didn't even intend to do this, but like, hey, we did some, I posted some linemen striking movements and we got communicating, and then we did the same thing and we didn't know what would become of it. And I think 43 minutes was edited to 11 because neither him or I had control of our tongue, and we had to edit a lot of it out, but it was a great conversation. And then I could be wrong. I think you spoke on auto-regulation at it might have been a track football consortium at Dallas Jesuit.
Yes. Yep. We had a at Dallas Jesuit. We had a former intern that ended up hosting a TFC. Yeah, it ended up down there. I can't remember what I spoke on exactly in that conference, but the auto regulation, I know at some point, yes, I spoke on that.
Yeah, I think I was sitting at BBT and auto regulation. It was great stuff. And that kind of, I think that might have been the first time I heard you speak and really got me intrigued and kind of following you. I know you were a walk-on at Iowa State. Was it from there immediately you went to St. Cloud?
Yep. Yeah, so I started out actually EA and Yance, like full circle here. Like, I walked on to Iowa State. I was like pre-PT, almost like pre-med actually. Going into college, I thought I wanted to be some version of like Dr. PT. Shadowed a couple of those places, ended up walking on, and my first day in the weight room, Yance was running things as the head strength coach, and then broke off into EA's group. And I, like, that day, that afternoon, I went and changed my major into like kinesiology. Oh, so wow. It was like an eye-opening experience. Like, definitely, like, I was that kid, like, growing up, I'm 11 or 12 Christmas, asked for like a weight set, like trained myself, had a younger brother, like loved training him in various sports as he progressed. But when I got to Iowa State and going into that weight room with Yance leading the charge and EA, it was like the first time that I realized that you could actually have a career through this. And it was like extremely eye-opening and awesome to get to experience that under those two. And they had a great staff at Iowa State at the time. So it was like a very cool experience as a collegiate athlete to see, oh, this is like, there's an opportunity to do this as a career. And that day, pretty much, or within that week for sure, I had changed my major.
No, that's pretty powerful experience to go in there and say, hey, this is exactly what I want to do.
Yeah.
When you went to St. Cloud, you were on the floor, strength and conditioning, same thing, University of Denver, correct? You were
yeah. coaching
Bob and programming for everybody. When did the, was it, you know, sometimes in business you make these changes just for career advancement. Was there a point where you said, hey, I want to dive deeper into sports science, or maybe back then, not to age ourselves, but there might not have been sports science positions that existed.
Yeah. Yeah. So St. Cloud in Denver, you are exactly correct. Strength and conditioning background, a lot of different sports. I did my graduate assistantship at St. Cloud. Transitioned to Denver and was the head strength coach of six teams. I was the associate director there for the 2.5 years time. But even within that, the exposure and my time, I was at Minnesota briefly with Cal Dietz for 6 months in between that as a strength coach and an intern for him a couple times, obviously very close with Cal as well. And I would say just the exposure to some of the tech that was starting to become available at the time. So when we were at Minnesota, like having Omega Waves and using that on guys daily and kind of running mini versions of a research study. Again, I would never claim that we have research grade statistics or outcomes from a weight room because you can't control all those variables, but you can definitely start to gain some insight around the changes or adaptations an athlete is realizing from the training. So between the Omega Wave from an internal standpoint from Cal, but then what we would also do, and again, we only had jump mats at that point, but through every phase of training, so introduced to Cal's obviously triphasic block periodization model, I would measure players' changes in their static squat jump and counter movement jump, hands on their hips, and start to and I presented on this a couple times because I use this at Denver for a volleyball team as well, but just start to understand that this like test retest component of understanding the adaptations that your training is providing your athletes. And then when I progressed to Denver, got a chance to run some of those programs on my own, obviously overseeing six teams. We were fortunate in Denver too, had some of the support where we did have 10 catapult units for some of our players. And so we shared those across multiple sports, but we're using those. And again, introduced to some of the data piece of like player management and monitoring. And so through those experiences, I would say the growth as a coach really, and I'm sure people correct me and say this isn't accurate, but to me, like applied sports science is really just taking strength and conditioning concepts and applying them like progressive overload with some different variations of how do we manage what our players are experiencing on the field through GPS? How are our players responding, right? These are things that maybe in the past we weren't able to objectively quantify, that we can now, but those should be ingrained, like the applied side of sports science, into the training pretty consistently. And so after those experiences, yeah, EA ended up moving on from his role at Texas, and that job opened up and Yancey was there. And so had some connections there, obviously, which is always beneficial in this field to have. But felt prepared to kind of take this step into this sports science role while maintaining some of the integrity of what a strength and conditioning coach does, right? Because a lot of times you hear sports science, and sometimes, depending on who you ask, that might be somebody that spends more time behind the computer than on the floor with the athletes. And I think the difference between those roles, there is a distinction, but at the same time, I think they can be blurred much more. And I think they are now than what maybe they were 5, 7, 10 years ago.
Yeah, and then I guess career path, and I think, you know, this is geared really towards either young interns or up and coming strength coaches, but also the seasoned veteran. And I find it all interesting. But at some point, your career, you played football, you love football. But I guess you went to the University of Denver, correct me if I'm wrong, they don't have football.
They do
so
not.
At that point, you're like, hey, I'm just committed to developing athletes regardless of the sport. And sometimes was it a situation like, hey, I'm going to jump on it. Football, no football, this is a great career opportunity. I'm kind of leaving football behind.
Yeah, like early on in my career at St. Cloud State, we did have football while I was there. And then when I moved to like Minnesota, when I was with Cal, I was men's and women's hockey as an assistant. It was baseball and like men's jumps and sprints and throws. And so it was non-football at Minnesota as well. And so I had kind of taken the approach, and I think there is a benefit to that, gaining the experience from a lot of different sports. Like if you're football only, you're only living one calendar year each year, versus if you're working at Denver, I had six teams that I was responsible for programming, their warm-ups on a daily basis. You just gain so many more experiences that way. And to me, if you take advantage of it, can learn at an accelerated rate. So then when you do get placed into, you're responsible for just one team, you have this depth of experience across all of these different programs that you can apply different pieces of it when appropriate within the environment that you're in. So I do think there's a huge benefit to getting exposed to a lot of different sports. Again, I think it's the same thing you probably talk about with some of your athletes, like early specialization can stunt long-term development. I think there's a piece of that for strength and conditioning as well. So that would be, again, I'm not advising that you have to absolutely go experience all these other sports, but I do think there's an opportunity. I wouldn't bind yourself to saying I'm only a one sport person, because even at the professional level, like you see, I've got friends and coaches that go from professional hockey to professional basketball, or from directors at collegiate environments for Olympics into professional baseball. And like, you have all these opportunities, but I think it's just a representation of, and vice versa too. You can go from pro into like an associate AD role in a college and like overseeing that, or like a head S&C role. But I think the opportunity to have so many different experiences allows you to grow at an exponential rate compared to if you just have one, if you're taking advantage of those. So
kind of like start, you know, your investment diversify and early on. So what I'm hearing is, if you're a potential intern all-star, come intern at Hardin-Simmons, where you can work with every sport that you want to.
Yeah, like that's what St. Cloud was for me. We had, yeah, it was myself and we had one, our head strength coach, and I was a GA, and it was us two for the 20 plus sports there. So again, you're coaching all day. Like you want some reps as a coach, like coaching players how to move through exercises, programming experience, like go somewhere that's going to give you that versus, and again, I've been in both places. I was an intern at, like, now I guess it's Power Four, but when I was dating myself here, age-wise, like, the same opportunity in a Power Four collegiate football weight room, because they have their five strength coaches that are coaching. And that's what the NCAA rule is, versus a smaller school. that maybe doesn't have all five of those roles filled.
Yeah. 6 months with Cal Dietz must have been one fascinating. And then you collaborated with, like, again, triphasic training. You couldn't have done that in 6 months. I guess that must have begun a relationship that just continued once you left there.
Well, that, and before I was officially hired there, I interned for Cal for 2 summers. So again, St. Cloud, I finished playing. I graduated in December at Iowa State. I stayed on intern with Yancey through the spring, and then going into that summer, ended up joining Cal's crew at Minnesota as an intern for the summer. Role opened up at St. Cloud, went up there for the school year, and then in the summer, the weight room was not open. And so went back to Minnesota and interned with Cal again that second summer, then went back to St. Cloud for part of my second year and ended up leaving that early for that 6 months with Cal full time. So to your point, yeah, my experience with triphasic was definitely much more involved than the 6 months that I was there full time.
you don't write books in like 6 months.
Yeah.
Which Cal Dietz, triphasic, perfect segue, like into isometrics. You're knowledgeable in so many different areas, but considering you wrote a book on it, I thought that would be a good topic of kind of nuts and bolts. It's safe to say it's something that you value and you implement, you're interested in. What got you started on isometrics? Was it the time with Cal, or was it something different?
Yeah, I think I definitely, with Cal, was probably my first like exposure to it from a coach, like educating me on it as a future coach. Not to say, like, we used them all the time at Iowa State. Like, when I go back and look at the programs that we ran, even from a even within our warm-up, like, we were doing different variations with Yancey's program of some long duration isos out of like split squat holds, things like that. But yeah, Cal with his block periodization was definitely a unique experience, and probably where I was really introduced to the concept of it and why we would use that at a within his program. And so I think as we progress, like, obviously my role here is a little bit different, and I'm not really doing any of the programming. I'm not really coaching as much anymore per se in my role here. But I think overall, like, it's been really cool. The experiences, again, you gain, like, Cal is a block periodization through and through model through triphasic. And he's done some hybrid programming, things like that for different times of the year too. But I think taking the ability to take concepts that you see and witness and then implement them within the constraints of your environment is really what makes great coaches, right? We can learn systems, processes, we can be educated on eccentrics, isometrics, but it's like, how do those fit into the program and the logistics of how we have to train our guys in our environment here? I think that's probably the piece that's the most intriguing, or that makes the most elite coaches, in my opinion.
Well, if I never had heard of an isometric, I just landed from Pluto to Earth, and I'm like, hey, Matt, we're on an elevator ride, maybe, you know, 10 to 12 story elevator ride. Why do I need to do them? What am I missing? Tell me a little bit. Sell me on them.
Yeah, I think, I mean, overall, man, that's a tough question. Fresh on Earth. So I break them into a couple different categories, right? And again, this is where it's like the ability to apply them. But overall, like, brief intro is like, hey, there's no movement. You can use them with no weight, no load for long duration to help postural control muscles, tissue tolerance with tendons, or you can take them all the way to the other end of the spectrum and make them overcoming like peak force. And that continuum allows you to be anywhere in the middle as well. So the range in which you can implement them is almost limitless, right? And so I think that makes them a huge benefit. And then you get the different benefits along the way. Like, you can get into the, and Keith Barr does a great job talking about some of the long duration isometrics and like that tendon creep and some of those benefits you can gain from there. Then if you want to flip to the performance side of things and go into like peak force production, peak impulse, whatever kind of metric you want to look at that you want to improve RFE, you can make that happen too out of an isometric. And obviously your time under tension would change between those two. But at the same time, the tissue stress that's involved is relatively low. Like, you're not typically going to see the mass amounts of soreness like you will from a heavy eccentric rep, things along those lines. So you can, like, we use them as a benefit here and in training in the past as a way to keep that neural drive high, some of that strength in place at specific joint angles. But also, you're not necessarily damaging the tissue to the point that guys, like, ultimately here, like, we're here to play football, not train. Training is a part of keeping them playing at a high level. But at the same time, we never want our training to detract from what we're trying to do on the field as a team. And so I think isometrics also offer a great opportunity there when they're implemented progressively and correctly to give guys a stimulus that may be otherwise kind of difficult to achieve.
Well, and thank you for welcoming me to Earth and Isometrics. I appreciate it. That was perfect. So let's say I'm sold. And I think myself and others would say, okay, I love them. It sounds good. My athletes will benefit from them. For me, sometimes the struggle is I need periodization, plan for it. You know, it's so easy to say, hey, I put another 2.5 on, I put another 5, and you can see it. And I would have to have the caveat of without force plugs, because we don't have those, you know, yeah, in our room at a D3. What does that look like? And again, this is kind of it's a much taller building with the elevator. It's like, hey, what movements work best? How do you progress? Does it look different for you for different positions? If you had big skills, mids in a football setting, times of the year, when are they better than others? So I'm sold. Yeah. Where do I get started on implementing?
Yeah, I would say I'd probably start with the time of year piece. And when I talk about this, I always kind of discuss two versions of it. One is a block periodization model, right? So Cal, when he writes his GPP programs and you look at them, he's going to run, this is back when I was there, he's going to run about a 3-week GPP aerobic block. And we're going to run long duration isos. One of those days is going to be a 5-minute iso, one if not two. And in that 5-minute iso, there's about 5 to 6 exercises or movements that are done, and the iso is held for 5 minutes. Now, in our environment here, I'm not probably going to be able to do that with a 330-pound lineman, right? Like, that is not the same as the hockey players that Cal is dealing with. And we are also different here that we're not going to be a block periodization model. Our schedule just does not fit that type of training. And so that is a difference between the two. But if we're going to stay on the block periodization, you got 3 weeks where you're doing this 5-minute isometric. We're trying to keep it what we would call like below 30% of like that muscle contraction, because we want blood flow to be able to get into and out of the muscle, right? We want to, and I did a presentation on this maybe 2014 at Cal's Minnesota conference, but like when you look at it, some of the lactate kinetics, not to get too in depth here, but some of like the transport pieces, when we're targeting that, what we're trying to do is get the muscle to be able to clear the production of waste at a higher rate. So when we coach our athletes during that block, that 3-week aerobic style block, we did contralateral stuff, his circuit, things along those lines as well. But we're coaching our athletes that as you train with intensity, you have a sink and a drain, right? And the sink is going to slowly fill up with metabolites, things like that, and you have this drain. Our goal in this 3 weeks is to make this drain as big as possible. You got this tiny little drain at the end of a big sink. Eventually, when you fill that sink up from high intensity actions, you can't clear that waste out quick enough and you're going to get stuck. And so our goal in that 3 weeks is to improve that drain. Then on the flip side, the next 2 weeks he'd call it like a lactate surrogate or glycolytic block. It'd be 2 weeks is the hardest. I would argue it's the hardest 2 weeks that we took any of our groups through. And that would transition to a 30-second isometric one day a week and a 30-second oscillatory, so small 3 to 4 inch range in Cal's program, push, pull, push, pull, right? So if I'm in my isometric position of a split squat, I'm maintaining that joint position other than about this 3 to 4 inches, and I'm slightly oscillating up and down. We would add load to that, and we'd be somewhere in the, I think it was 55 to 65 in the oscillatory, and I think it was 65 up to maybe 75% 1RM for the 30-second ISO. And that was programmed in a way that it would be 30 seconds of a single limb. So I'd be split squat right leg, and then I'd be dumbbell bench press left arm for 30 seconds. And I only have 10 seconds in between. Then I'd go 30 seconds left split squat, 30 seconds right arm. And I, so there'd be four distinct exercises with 10 seconds in between them. And then we'd work through maybe about 12 to 15 exercises, depending on the program. Give the players about 2 to 3 minutes of rest to recover, and then repeat that three distinct times. So that 2 week block is now higher intensity, right? You're seeing higher forces. It's still yielding isometrics. You are trying to stabilize with the load. It's not an overcoming where you're pressing into an immovable object. And during that time, what we would cue our players is like, now our goal is to try and fill that sink as high as it can. And what's going to happen is those cells is they're going to typically expand right in their size to reduce the concentration that is experienced during high intense actions. And so those are kind of like the 5 weeks. Now, Cal used to do in that block a 2 week, 10 second, we call it like our ATP creatine phosphate type of block. That'd be a 10 second rep that's overcoming with a little bit longer rest. Now you're trying to see those peak forces in all those different joint positions that you would like to see from that athlete. And then from there, you're transitioning into your eccentrics, right? Now you've seen, you've prepared the body from a tissue tolerance standpoint. You've gradually progressed from body weight for 5 minutes to up to 75% for the 30 seconds to maximal for 10 seconds. Now you're prepared for that super maximal eccentric workload that he's going to put on you. So that would be the block periodization. Now for our model here, or in a call, which like conjugate, vertical integration, whatever model that you want to call, like where you're mixing and matching, what we found the most benefit with is like early in the off season, doing more of our long duration stuff, same concept, right? But we'll build pockets of those either into the warm up or at the very end of the lift, right? So instead of having maybe an entire day for 5 minute ISOs, each day at the end, you might have a 5 minute ISO on a specific joint. If it's a lower body day, maybe it's a split squat. If it's an upper body day and you want to emphasize like posterior, like we've done shoulder stuff before, from a postural standpoint, we've done like rows, we've done dumbbell benching, and the weight's extremely light, but that would be the way that we would integrate that and then progress obviously throughout your, call it first 4 to 5 weeks, into some like heavier 65 to 75% with those 30 second ISOs. So again, it's really about, can you take the concepts and apply them in a lot of different ways? Because then when whatever context you end up in, if you can apply your systems, you can usually see some pretty good benefit from that.
That's a great analogy. I like the drain and the sink, kind of like, it comes across to me. I always understand it in your book. You said you have the force production of a truck, but you have the springs of a bicycle. That automatically registers in my head. And at first, I'm like, 5 minutes, my goodness. And then it starts to make a little more sense. If you had to just guess, percentage of the entire training program, isometrics, 10%, more?
That's tough because we're using them in so many different ways now between some of the, and Alex Natera has done a great job of like doing some, like making these more popular and more well-known with like the run specific isometrics. I would tell you, I don't know the exact percentage relative to total training time, but I can tell you we don't do a warm-up pre-practice and we don't do a lift that does not involve a multiple isometrics at this point, whether they're hamstring, groin, call it knee, quad based, ankle, like there are at least two, if not three of those components in every single training session, as well as every single warm up for us pre-practice.
And then do they shift more to overcoming in season away from yielding or?
We typically, depending on the day of the week, for us, like Monday versus Wednesday versus Friday for our lifts. And it depends on the player and what they've experienced. Obviously our roster size here, you're really dealing with 53 guys on the active roster, and we've got 16 P squad guys too that move up and down with them playing in the game. So there's a lot more capability to individualize players. So it really does depend on that player's schedule and structure. But I would say in general, we progress from a pretty consistent yielding on Mondays and work the loads up. So coming off of a game, stay a little more yielding. And then for our mids and skills, like that, we want to hit some like either peak force or some RFD. We'll use some more like rapid overcoming positions for those guys. Our bigs, though, not as much overcoming. We'll load them more through the actual like a barbell or dumbbell, something along those lines.
Do you have recommendations? Obviously, you're at the highest level. If someone was a high school coach, is there a training age or a real age? I mean, it seems to me like I was having a discussion with somebody. It's like, I've never seen anyone in my life get hurt on an isometric. It seems like the safest method of training there is. Is there an age you should wait to start until? Or?
No, I think, with the overcoming, you obviously need to be aware of, like, an easy example is we used to do a split squat overcoming where the barbell would be in between the legs of the person. So they'd be in their split squat, pulling up into a pin, and you got to make sure that bar stays close to the quad of the back leg, right? And that they're staying upright and they don't end up in a flex forward position and they're ripping all from their back. So the overcoming pieces, I would just say, like, obviously if you're in a mass group of young, when I was at Denver, we ran a program in the evenings for the club lacrosse team. So we were dealing like kids as young as probably 6 to 8 at times. I'm not giving them the overcoming stuff. Maybe our like 12 to 14s if it's a smaller group, but we use yielding consistently. Like that's the beauty to me of like triphasic and the concepts in really any training, if you can regress it and find a way, but we use triphasic variance with kids as young as 6 to 8. I'm not saying like super maximal overcoming, and I wasn't putting a barbell on their back, but we were doing like maybe goblet squat variations of like eccentric tempos, iso tempos, things like that with very minimal weight, and then pairing that with just some of the positional isometrics that we're talking about here, just to teach them tolerance in positions, right? So I don't think there's necessarily an age that's even too young, as long as, again, I would probably say the yielding side of things makes a little more sense than the overcoming. Just even those younger athletes from a neural drive standpoint, are they really getting out of that what you think they are?
Yeah. Last kind of nuts and bolts question, and then I'll pass it off for more kind of career intern questions. And I think I texted you this once, but French contrast method, isometrics, to me, again, I'm curious, why isn't it more integrated, or why isn't, you know, that the first movement and then there'd be five?
Say that last part again, the first movement and then what?
Well, if there's four movements in the French contrast,
yeah,
activation, potentiation, whatever, it seems natural to have an isometric, which would then make five movements.
Yeah.
An overcoming iso to precede the heavy loaded first movement.
Yeah, so a couple different ways to look at that. And yeah, I do agree. Like, so what we talked about with Cal's block periodization, we talked about the sink and the drain across those first 5 weeks, right? 5 minute duration, long duration to 30 seconds, but this 10 second version that we were talking about, what we've ended up doing, and I believe Cal's doing this as well at this point, we took that and we removed that 2 week block. We don't do a 2 weeks of 10 second overcoming isometrics at all these different joint positions or movements, or exercises, I should say, because there is no movement. But we added those to the start of our French contrast. So what I would like, Max Schmarzo and I, when we did the isometrics for Performance Book, I don't know what year that was. I think I was at Denver still, or maybe I was just at Texas, but like 2015, 2016 range, I think I was at Denver, is we would do these overcoming isometrics for 3 to 5 seconds and then progress into our eccentric, isometric, or concentric reactive version of triphasic. And so to your point, that is what we ended up doing because we didn't want to dedicate 2 full weeks to this 10-second isometric. Like we didn't feel there was enough. There's definitely bang for your buck, but it's like, okay, is there enough to spend 2 full weeks on this program? And so that's where we landed. So we do, we have added that, like if you go back and look at the triphasic team sport or lacrosse manual that we did, you'll see that PAP implemented at those different phases within the programs that we ran at Denver. So it would be a 3 to 5 second isometric that would match the movement that we're doing. So we would use that pin pull split squat prior to going into a split squat, and whether it was eccentric, you were in the eccentric phase, isometric in the isometric phase, you could do those at super maximal workloads with an advanced athlete if you progress to that and you feel comfortable with it, or it's reactive. And then we would go into our French contrast, right? And so that French contrast, body weight, resisted and overspeed or assisted jumps, and how we would program that is we would go more vertical in our earlier phases. So for it'd be hurdle hops for height as our body weight jump, right? So Cal used that pretty heavily, love that for like the ankle complex specifically. So getting guys off the ground quick there. We would do a loaded vertical jump with a trap bar during our eccentric and isometric phases. We would add the pause there, a little bit more starting strength, muscle slack, RD. You can look at all those pieces in that phase. And then the assisted would either be, and now Cal has progressed well beyond this, but we would be looking at the band overspeed jumps, right? And we would pause in between those reps during the eccentric and the isometric as well, right? So you're looking at that rapid, from a pause, can I rapidly produce force? And after seeing those blocks, that's the reason why I went back and looked at the comparison in our jump mat from the static squat jump to the counter movement jump from a tendon usage. And that's where that, like the bike shocks and the truck tires, like analogy originally came from, right? Like as those, what you'll see is, throughout your eccentric and isometric phases, the gap between the counter movement jump will improve, but the squat jump will improve at a greater rate. So you're closing the gap. And then when you flip it back over to your reactive power and speed, you're going to see that CMJ go through the roof because you've laid that foundation, is what we saw pretty typically with the players that we tested phase in and phase out. And so, but then as we progress in that French contrast through some of your like reactive power speed phases, we would try to get more specific and go horizontal. So we would move to hurdle hops for distance, right? So now you're getting this horizontal projection. Like now we've got obviously like Ryan Grubbs here manages a lot of our speed training, like him and Jonas out of Speedworks, like some of the zero step pieces can be great additions into your French contrast as a contrast model. And then we even wrote, I think myself and CO was our speed guy at Iowa State and Texas. I think this was back when I was maybe just at Minnesota, but CO and I did an article, I think it's on my site somewhere, about using French contrast in like horizontal running and how we applied that in different ways. And there's a bunch of different exercise examples of how we progress that as well. But overall, yeah, I think it's a very, very beneficial tool that can be implemented at a pretty high level. Again, I think there is a level of it that you probably want a little bit more of an advanced athlete to push into that. Let's make sure we got some of the basics right before we implement that. But yeah, there's definitely high reward on that when the athlete is prepared and executes that with intent.
Yeah, definitely. Love the isometric talk. Obviously, very went straight to the source, extremely knowledgeable. And to try to help young professionals as well, I'm going to pass it off to Brock with kind of intern business profession questions.
Yeah, no, great. Thank you, guys.
Hi, I'm Brock. Nice to meet you.
Brock, great to meet you.
So as an intern, I'm in the sports science realm. What's something that you could kind of give us to kind of work with, like data wise? Like, what's something that do we need to focus more on the data, or are we seeing it more on the floor? Like, what's something we're looking for, like to rely on pretty much?
Yeah. I mean, I would say this goes back, and again, I know I'm going to be biased because of my experience, right? We're all biased to our own experiences, but I think, especially with the technology that is available, I think it is critical that people, whether they are just sports science or whether they're a hybrid of both coach, like SNC coach and sports science, or even just SNC coach, in my opinion, like there should be an understanding across those three different groups, again, just sports science hybrid or just SNC, of like the foundational like knowledge of like movement coaching, like coach's eye, like how an athlete is moving and maybe how that's changing. Like those are pieces back in, like I say back in the day, like I'm really old, I'm not, but like when I was in college, there was no GPS. Like when I graduated in 2012, there was like, it was just starting to, like a couple teams may have had a couple units. And I think like, this is where it's really cool. You talk to some of these coaches, like Yancey and CO, who I've both mentioned here, and EA, like they would literally go watch the film and like try and like accumulate the yards, calculate those based on watching the practice film for players. And then they would turn around and try and recreate that stimulus and even exceed that stimulus in our summer training, right? So it's like, how is your information, how is the context of your information being received across the coach's eye component? Obviously, there's like the statistics component of like, is there actual like change in this metric, right? But you got to be able, before you even get there, you've got to be able to define what your metrics that are meaningful are, and then what is meaningful change within those. And then the real trick is, how do you apply that? What are you doing with that information? And it's hard. Like it's not something that just happens overnight. Like this is my sixth year here, and it's still like every year we find things that we want to tweak and improve. But I'd say that at a foundational level, like I would say, don't get over married to a piece of tech, right? It's the same as like we were talking about earlier, like my experience with a bunch of different sports allows me to have a greater understanding and like specific, not specific knowledge, but depth of knowledge when you get to the opportunity of having just one sport. Same thing here, is like have as many opportunities to watch a player move, watch them train, know how to coach them, know what they look like before you start to really get into the tech side of things. And then on the tech side, I just think it's like keep the main thing, right? Like that's probably the, like there are, again, like if we're going to rank these, like I would probably say a GPS version of technology of understanding what your players are going through on the field of play or in their training sessions on the field is probably your biggest bang for your buck. Like that's the piece that we weigh the most heavily. And then again, we're fortunate here with the resources. We have the opportunity to look at how is the player responding to those things. But I would say that that's probably the most important piece, is like, are your players prepared to do what they're going to be asked to do, right? And you can monitor that through some of those on-field metrics. And then when a player experiences a change, what are we doing to help them, for lack of a better term, survive that change in workload? And so that's probably the biggest one. And then again, you can get like deeper down the rabbit hole of like, okay, this athlete went through a change. Which of these five athletes that all went through changes may be at an increased risk? Now we start to look at what is that player experiencing from a internal or external output change standpoint. So I don't know if that answers your question perfectly or not,
that was a pretty good answer for my part. And also, as an intern, what's something that you experienced personally that, say, you could have went back and did a little differently? Or is there, like, something that you could, you know, give to us to where, like, this is something you guys need to do or should be doing? Kind of some insight onto that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and I was an unfortunate, I had people that, I mean, I look back, like you, we talk about Yancey, we talk about Cal Dietz, even like Matt Shaw at the University of Denver was our director there. Like, I've been fortunate to have incredible mentors along the way. Even when I was at St. Cloud, our my director of my graduate program was actually very close and very well respected by Cal. And so Dr. Bacharach, like, he had kind of like the physiology, like the research side of things. Obviously, Cal is more of the mad scientist side of things. And so I got the healthy blend of those two. Is like, okay, Cal is saying this. This is what he's saying and what it means in research. So to be able to speak those two languages and have those kind of mentors is hugely valuable. And I would say that's probably the, and you guys have done a great job, clearly, like just being on this call and what you guys have put together, but like having a mentor that can help you navigate some of that early phase of, because there's a lot of uncertainty early in this career path. And I would say along with that, like things that I look back that I'm really thankful for outside of the mentor piece is I took advantage of every opportunity I had to go visit other places. So when I look back at, even when I was in college on like spring breaks, like I would make it a point to, if we were going somewhere, we usually went somewhere as a family, like whatever area we went to, whether it was like, we're from Iowa, right? So we want to get to the South. Nobody wants to be in Iowa in March, I promise. And so whether we went to like somewhere in Florida or Arizona or South Carolina, like I specifically remember like Joe Conley, like great guy to me. Like we were traveling through a day in South Carolina on our way to spring break. And I think he was on spring break and came and met me in the weight room. And we talked for maybe an hour and a half of his time. And so it's like, I think trying to find ways, or when I was at St. Cloud, I would every weekend that we didn't have, like I didn't travel with football at that time and I had a free weekend. I was traveling around at that time. Gavin Bowman was at USC, the head guy there. Dietrich was his GA. Dietrich's now at Stanford. Like we knew them through Iowa State. Like I'd go visit them and like just, again, Zoom makes it a lot easier now. You can have conversations that we couldn't have back then for sure. But like, I think there's something to be said about making the most of the opportunities when you have free time. Like this career path is a commitment, right? Like you guys know this, like what it takes to really be elite in this. It takes a ton of time and it takes a ton of lessons learned along the way. And so I think the more you invest in that early, I think the better outcome you're likely to achieve on the back end. And then I would say the third thing like that really sticks out to me and the kind of piece that I always give to younger coaches is be where your feet are. Like I've had the opportunity and again, I call it blessed, call it luck, you call it what you want, call it when preparation like meets opportunity, whatever kind of like stigma you want to put on that. But like, I've never been one to like go search for a job, right? I have been one that has been, opportunities have kind of like come to me. And I'm not saying that happens for everybody because again, different opportunities pop up at different times. If I wasn't ready for one of those opportunities, maybe I'm not sitting in the position that I'm in right now. And so I think doing a great job of where you are with the people that are with you, like in that foxhole right now, is a huge piece to your growth and development, right? Like we have a saying here, it's like identify problems and like find solutions to those, right? Fix problems, find solutions is really what we say. And I think the more you learn how to do that in any environment that you're in, that benefits you in the long run, wherever you end up going after that.
That's great. And then me and Ashley about to go train up some women's hoops, but we do want to finish with one rapid fire question from Blake. Fire away, Blake. You got one?
Yeah. So we kind of asked, you know, every guy we have on here, you could talk to any coach, dead or alive, you know, just have a sit-down conversation, who would that be?
Who would that be? That would probably be, oh, geez, one coach?
You work with Cal, so you can't say that.
No, I got two probably that I would say. I think it would probably be somewhere, and I got it right here, actually. Like, it'd probably be a Verkhoshansky, right? Okay. So this is my all-time favorite book. I know it doesn't look like it's clear enough, but it's the Special Strength Training Manual for Coaches. This is probably my all-time favorite book that I've read. Like, I still got bookmarks all over this thing and notes like crazy.
It's a real light read there, Coach. That's a real
right, exactly. But if you give me a chance to pick a second one, the other one I'd look at is probably D.B. Hammer. I think what he produced from his book, again, I know he uses a little different terminology than what we're typically accustomed to from a strength and conditioning standpoint. But I think a lot of his concepts, the experiences that I've had with Cal, have seen how Cal is elite at being able to bring in some of these great coaches from the past, minds and thoughts, and put them into a system. And so if I get one, I'd probably pick Verkhoshansky. If I get a close second, though, would be D.B. Hammer.
D.B. Hammer is kind of like a ghost, or he's like it's like no one knows him, but he sent some emails and we transcribed him. Like, who is this guy? I don't know if he really exists. It might just be a name someone's using. That's kind of, I don't know. But Coach, appreciate your time so much. Love the conversation. Still like to get you out to Abilene at some point for the clinic if it works out. But man, it was awesome. Can't thank you enough, Coach.
No, you guys let me know. Obviously, Texas is a big state, but happy to try and figure out anything that works. And really appreciate everybody's time here. Like, it's the great chat, and you guys are doing great work, clearly. So really, really appreciate this opportunity.
It helps when you have amazing guests like yourself. It makes it pretty easy. But go Texans.
Go Texans. And if you want to share my phone number, feel free. If you guys have other questions, I know we ran out of time here. I probably was too long-winded on some stuff.
No.
Feel free. You got reach out anytime.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it.
Yes. Thanks, guys.
All right. Have a good one.
Actually, no cones. We'll just
try to have that one question be the consistent.